Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The season is finally over as we get into another edition of the VanCast, and it ended with a bit of a thud on a lot of levels. You know, you had a Game Canuck team in Edmonton for the final game of the year, but really what came out today, and this happens across the league, lockers get cleaned out and you learn a little bit more about maybe what you weren't privy to during the course of the regular season. And certainly we're not surprised to know that the Vancouver Canucks dealt with a lot of other ups and downs beyond what you just saw on the ice. But certainly the emotional element of it today involving a number of different players, most notably Brock Besser, it hit home for a lot of us as we welcome in Thomas Drancer to the latest episode of the VanCast. And Drancer, you know, we were in the midst of it at Rogers Arena. And, you know, let's start there because, you know, we learned about Bo Horvat's injury. We learned about Thatcher Demko, who finally talked to the media after a fairly extended absence and just some of the things he was dealing with on the health front over the past month. But, you know, Brock Besser, who for the last couple of years has had a lot of health issues regarding his father. This isn't new to many of us because he's had a number of different things. Brock kind of came clean with the fact that his dad is dealing with some dementia. It's gotten fairly bad this year, and it's something that he's been wearing throughout the year. So we know that he's had various injuries, and you know the entire team had different, you know, COVID absences and things of that nature. But for Brock Besser, who's such a family guy, you could tell how difficult this was for him and for his teammates who were so close to him and tried to be there for him.
Yeah, and tried to steer the conversation, right? Both Quinn and Elias Pettersson tried to jump in and say next question, but Brock wanted to go, wanted to keep talking. I mean, it was a really tough moment. You know, the first time I talked with Brock about this was late November. And he just sort of mentioned it off record when we were talking about a couple of other things. And then when we were on this latest road trip, we were in Colorado, and he just walked by me in the hallway, and I'm like, oh man, it's too bad you're not going to have much time with your family. And he sort of was like, oh yeah. But like, he said it in a way that I was like, oh, is he going to have more time with his family than the 22 hours that the team's scheduled to spend in St. Paul? And so I just sort of started digging around and began to understand just how severe things had gotten with Duke Besser, right? And he ended up getting special permission from the team, which was offered quite willingly, by the way. Bruce Boudreau at one point had taken Besser aside and said, you know, whatever you need, right? Like up to and including a length of absence from the team to be with his family. But they gave him special permission. He stayed behind. The team flew to Dallas that night and Besser stayed behind and got in an extra, you know, not quite 24 hours, but an extra day with his family, spending time with them. And look, that was a really important game for Brock and for Brock's family, that game in Minnesota in late March, because there was real fear leading up to it. And I want to note for any of our listeners who haven't read my piece at The Athletic yet, but you know, everything I'm about to say is confirmed with the family directly, and they've given me permission to share these details. But there was real concern ahead of that Minnesota game that, you know, Duke might not get to see Brock play again. And so he did. He was there. They enjoyed the game in the suite together. And then Brock stayed behind. All of this has taken place in private, right? I mean, I sort of had all this information and I chatted with him post-game and I said, look, I don't want to take up any of your time with your family, but if you'd like to chat about this in St. Louis, I'd love to talk to you about it, right? Like, I have all these details. I'd love to chat with you about it. And, you know, ultimately he declined. I just think it was too emotional. Like, honestly, I think we saw that today. I think trying to address it is just too hard, considering, you know, the fact that he's very close with his dad and that his dad has, you know, dealt with some health issues over the years, but, you know, has had a relatively rapid decline and at this point is dealing with advanced stage, Parkinson's. And let me just get this right, just out of respect. But it's Parkinson's disease dementia. And yeah, it's in an advanced stage at this point. And it's been an extraordinarily arduous and difficult season for a guy who, you know, dealt with all of that well outside the public eye, despite the fact that, you know, in the past, him and his family have been relatively open and I think have been extremely appreciative of the support of this fan base. You know, I think this time it was something that Brock certainly wanted to be private until it spilled over into public view during his season ending availability and an emotional availability on Sunday morning.
Yeah. And you could see that he's been wearing it. And certainly, you know, we've talked about Besser from a hockey standpoint and a future standpoint because of the qualifying offer and where things stand. But, you know, you could tell that it's a young group. The core of this team is very young. And I think they're connected from that respect, right? And I think that they relate and they understand each other a little bit, and they're trying to help each other out as much as they can. And you could tell that both Hughes and Pettersson were feeling it with him. I mean, obviously not to the same degree, but they care, right? And it matters to them. So a difficult situation for the Besser family. And, you know, hopefully he gets back to Minnesota as soon as possible here and can spend as much time as possible there. And that there's better days ahead for his father Duke, right? Because, we can sit there and talk about everything we want to in hockey terms. And I'm not saying any of that is wrong, right? Like, if you want to be critical, be critical. But at the same time, it's so easy for all of us to view these guys as different because of the amount of money they're making, right? And when they play the sport that they do at the highest possible level, you sometimes view them as something beyond human, and that's not the case. And, you know, and certainly, it's tough, right? Like, it's tough to always compartmentalize. And yeah, you could say on one hand they get paid to do that, but they don't. They're still human. We all get paid to compartmentalize and focus on our jobs when it's time to focus on our jobs. And it's no different because you make $7 million or $6 million or whatever it happens to be, right? The stakes don't make you less emotional. They don't make you less vulnerable. So for him, you can't be critical if it affected his season. You can be critical, but you can't be critical of him for allowing this to affect his season, because it's so much more important. Like, you can't even put the two in the same conversation. So again, all the best to his family. And hopefully, they find a better place. And, You know, from Brock's perspective, you know, we'll see how all the, you know, the contracts and things like that play out over the course of the next couple of months. But clearly he means a lot to the players in that room. And regardless of what the hockey argument is or isn't for keeping Brock Besser, he matters to Elias Pettersson. He matters to Bo Horvat. He matters to Quinn Hughes. He matters to Thatcher Demko. And that will matter in the Canucks thinking and their decision making as much as it can.
Yeah, character guy. He's a character guy who's been through a ton already in his young life, right? And continues to go through a ton this season. The most important thing at this point is, you know, in a couple of days, Besser will get to be back home and be with his family. So all our best to the Bessers and to Duke Besser in particular.
Let's talk a little bit about Bo Horvat, who explained that he had a fracture at the bottom of his tibia. Nothing displaced, doesn't need surgery. But it was a 6 to 8 week injury. So the thought of him coming back, you know, even if they had made the playoffs anytime soon, that just wasn't going to happen. And you have to believe it. You know, everybody in the room knew that. And I'm not suggesting it impacted them emotionally or their motivation. I mean, I think every one of them played really, really hard. But tough break for the Canucks when it happened, because Bo Horvat was playing arguably his best hockey.
No question. And yeah, I mean, tough break, but he has a kid. Seems open to extension talks, right? He had another child, sorry, to be clear. Tulsa Horvat is his latest. So it was a productive year. productive year for the Canucks captain. And then, of course, waylaid a little bit by the injury, although, as he noted, he was able to be there for the birth a little bit more simply, in a more straightforward fashion, than he might have been were he healthy, considering the Canucks' schedule. So, you know, little blessings in life, right? Those do matter. And yeah, I mean, this team missed Horvat a ton when he went down. And I mean, he's really good.
Well,
it is what it is.
Well, no, you're right. But like, you know, as we've talked before about what this team is and what they aren't, and I want to get into kind of their comments a little bit to dissect exactly what they think they are. Understand that for all the roster construction issues that we keep beating the fan base over ahead with, when in order for this team to get on the run that they did to the point where they were still in contention to get into the playoffs, you know, as most recently as 2 weeks ago, Bo Horvat was playing the best hockey of his career. Elias Pettersson was playing the best hockey of his career. Quinn Hughes, arguably the best hockey of his career. Short careers in many of these cases, but think of how well the top of this lineup needed to play and finally was able to play in order for them to get to that point, right?
Yeah.
Like there was no margin for error with those players. I mean, JT Miller was playing maybe not his best, because maybe when he was scoring a bit more a couple weeks ago, you could say that was his best, but he was still playing very good hockey. You know, and other guys were playing really well, but just in terms of that top end of their lineup, they had to, you know, play at the best level they've ever played at in order to still allow this team to win, given some of its other deficiencies. So right. When you pull a guy like Bo Horvat out, it was naive to think that it was going to continue. I mean, it might not have continued regardless, but the way he was playing, he meant so much to that team in that moment prior to the injury.
Yeah, there's just no margin with the way that this team is constructed. They just don't control play well enough 5-on-5 to lose a finisher or an emotional leader or a guy who takes draws. Like, there's no margin when you're a top-heavy team that's relying on goaltending, right? I mean, it's sort of my substantive critique is, what can you fall back on when bodies go out? What can you fall back on? A structural element? Can you fall back on a defensive ability, a two-way ability, the ability to control play 5-on-5. The answer for this team is no, or they can't. And so every top gun that they have needed to be firing, and needed to be firing at a level they've maybe never fired before all at once, just for this team to get, you know, to the fringes of the playoff race. And they never really got into the chase pack. So, you know, that's like line item number one on reasons why I'm skeptical that the 106-point Bruce Boudreau pace is just sustainable. Don't worry about it. Clap your hands and return the roster for next season. There needs to be improvement.
Let's get into that in a moment. One player who wasn't playing at that level, and you said they were relying on goaltending, they really weren't, right? Like they did earlier, but the last couple of months, they didn't. And in the last
I don't know if you watched the last week and how heavily they relied on Spencer Martin.
It's a great point. Spencer Martin was outstanding. Thatcher Demko was merely good in the last couple of months. And this is not me trying to poop on Thatcher Demko. The last month, he admitted he's been dealing with something. It's shown in his play. Right? He's been dealing with something. He even talked about parts of the year. He was very happy with his play, and parts of his year, maybe not so much. And that this was a real learning experience for him. It's the first time he's been through it. And he knows now, right, what it feels like and how to deal with it. But before we get to any of that, he also said he wasn't sure if a procedure would be required. So what can you tell us about the injury and where this is headed?
Well, not much. Honestly, not much. It's good that surgery won't be required, but...
Will it not? Because he sounded like he wasn't quite sure one way or the other.
Well, and those are always ones where, like, especially when it's an off-season thing, you almost wonder if you should just do it. You know, because so often these storylines go, like, we thought we could avoid surgery with treatment, and then that doesn't work, and you end up getting surgery anyway at some
point. For sure.
You know, like that's my experience with hockey injuries, both inside and covering them from outside. If surgery is possibly needed and you're going to try to avoid it when it's the off season, you know, more often than not, you wonder if anyway, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. That's
no,
just
you're
my
not.
Experience.
And, you know, with goalies and
no, you're not.
Not. No, but like with goalies, right? We tend to worry about things like hip labrums and abdominal or core type injuries, right? When you're talking about surgery, as opposed to, you know, like you're probably not going to get a groin operated on, but, you know, those are the things that typically crop up when it comes to goaltending, and they can be tricky, right? Because they're all overuse injuries, and, you know, goalies go through this at various points in time. I mean, heck, even our goalie guru, Kevin Woodley, just to be part of the union, went and got surgery on his hip labrum at one point, right? So, you know,
it saved him 20% off his membership dues.
I would concur, but again, we don't know what the injury is. But if it's in the middle, like you'd love to see. I tend to concur with you to get it done if it can happen in a 4-month time period, and if it's one of those things where, ultimately they've got a good medical team and they're going to make the right decision. It clearly showed in his game, and the one player they needed, let me take that back. While everybody else was playing at a ridiculous level, Thatcher Demko was playing at that ridiculous level earlier, right? And then he just played at a human level down the stretch in the final month, maybe even 2 months of the season post.
Although now we understand, like, he was still playing so much hockey, considering that he was ailing, right? I mean, and we knew it. Like, we could see it in between periods sometimes, and, you know, he'd be limping off, and he was writing off concerns about his rest, and even today said, I'm not afraid to play, but, I mean... There's only two goalies who played more than he did, right? One is Connor Hellebuck, who's probably the best puck stopping human in the world. Well, played 65 plus games, .910 save percentage. That's not Connor Hellebuck. He didn't play to his normal level this year. Is that because he played too much? I don't know. I'm not saying I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just saying it's a question I'd have. And then UC Saros, who's now out 4 to 6 weeks, and his team's facing the Avalanche without him. Big save Dave and net. Good luck to you. I mean, he got overused too. And then Thatcher Demko comes in third. Well, Thatcher Demko seems to have played the last month of the season ailing. I mean, it just goes to show you how important it is to have a backup who can play 25 minimum. Like, you shouldn't be getting into 60 games, in my opinion, at this point.
But no, I couldn't agree more. And maybe
especially
Spencer
if you have playoff aspirations.
Yeah, and Spencer Martin has shown that he can play 5 really good games. We'll see if he can play 20 or 25 because the ball is certainly his, or the puck is certainly his for next year.
More than really good. He was he was outrageous, right?
I
mean, they got points in every game. Their third string goaltender started, which is not common, especially considering he was .950 in those games. And again, you know, you want to chalk up things that I'm skeptical that you can just return the roster and get the same results next year. Like, line item one, Spencer Martin, 9 points and 6 starts with a .950. Like, you can't expect to get that level of play from your third string netminder. Everything hit for this team. Like, everything hit all at once. And they still end up, 5 points out? 4 points out?
Well, again, I don't agree that it did all hit, but we'll get into that and just kind of how this team views itself along with a bit more Spencer Martin when we come back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, Drencher, let's talk a bit about Spencer Martin. And we understand he's signed to a one-way deal for next year. And the Canucks, you know, they're paying him. They want him to be here and to be the backup. He has shown them enough in his five games. And look, I'm a believer. I'm in. And even the way he played in the second half of the back-to-backs, right? Like, I mean, that's not easy for a goaltender who's got a very small sample size in the National Hockey League to come in and do back-to-backs. And yes, McDavid wasn't playing and Draisaitl wasn't playing, along with Nurse, obviously, who's been dealing with some stuff. So he didn't get the full version, but this is still a National Hockey League lineup, and he had to go into it in back-to-backs, and he performed really well. They're going to roll with him. Are you confident he can take 5 or 6 and turn it into 25 next year?
Sure. I mean, they're goalies. Like, who knows? You know? Yeah. Who knows? Connor Hellebuck's a 9-10 this year, right? I think Connor Hellebuck's the best bet in the league to be 9-19 any given year, and he was 9-10 this year, right? Who knows? Like, I couldn't tell you. Sergei Bobrovsky was like 9-15 this year, right? I mean, who knows? So yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I think it's a good sign, a good proof of concept that, you know, in year one of Ian Clark's new contract, the club was number one in the NHL by a lot in terms of 5-on-5 save percentage. Like, good. There you go. That's you're betting on a guy who does know, right? And I'm going to always defer to a guy like Clark ahead of a guy like me, who doesn't really, like, I can't see the difference between a good goaltender and a bad goaltender. I can just look at save percentage and sustainability and, you know, identify when I think a guy's overheated. Martin was definitely overheated in his first 6 games, but he had really good numbers in the AHL too. So maybe they've tweaked something. Maybe the work that he's put in with Curtis Sanford, maybe they figured out something and he can find a new sustainable level of play. And yeah, that level is not going to be 950 save percentage goaltending, but if it's 905, 910, I mean, that'd be great. That'd be huge. That would be what you need to give Thatcher Demko the 25 nights off that you absolutely need to give him, and inviolable nights off where he's not coming in relief. That's the task at hand. It's a big ask for a goaltender who's never been a full-time NHL backup, but certainly you've seen enough, I think, that you feel pretty good about it going into this offseason. And look, you don't have any other options, right? Your average backup at this point in the league costs $2 million. And this club cannot spend $2 million in net when they've got a $5 million starter, a $1.9 million buyout cap hit from the Braden Holtby move, and a $1.25 million performance bonus overage, you know, hitting their books from Yaroslav Halak. Like, this is what it is. You have to go with Spencer Martin. Spencer Martin's given you no reason to not believe that he can do it. And that's why the club is, you know, intent on giving him that opportunity.
And remember, it's ironic here because usually you do something in the AHL and that gets you to a point of an NHL opportunity. It actually went backwards for Spencer Martin because he spent an extended amount of time here as a third goaltender before he finally got to play, right? Like, he was here for a little bit because they didn't want to bring up one of the two goaltenders that was getting played more in Abbotsford in that moment. So I think he got some work with Ian Clark, built some confidence in the 3 games he played earlier, and was able to take that back with him to Abbotsford and elevate his game and opportunity in Abbotsford, right? Like, his American League play became better and he became their number one after what he did in Vancouver, as opposed to the other way around, because he was the 5th goalie in the organization at one point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was acquired to be a veteran depth guy, a fifth goaltender acquired for free, literally for free from Tampa Bay. Ryan Johnson and Ian Clark sort of collaborating on that. And yeah, I mean, there was no expectation that he would do this, but he has. And he's earned himself his first ever one-way contract, and good for him. I mean,
with all of that, and I bring up the earlier time he spent here before his first starts here, because that's when Clark got a look at him, and that probably helped the buy-in factor in terms of what they did, because he got the contract before he played these last three games, right? So it was done basically on that practice time spent, the three games, and then what we were seeing in Abbotsford. So, and I know this is hindsight, but this is what we do. Could the Canucks have handled this differently when you take all the factors in to have avoided the situation they got in with Thatcher Demko getting hurt because he got overworked? And I'm assuming that, and I don't think it's a flawed assumption, but I, you know, it certainly appears, though, that the workload contributed to the injury. So I know that Demko was, or sorry, not Demko, Halak was struggling at one point. And there was a decision to be made, right, on the on what to do with the Halak bonus and whether or not they should just keep rolling out Martin and the trade deadline coming and all of that. Could they have handled it differently? Should they have handled it differently? And it wouldn't have led them down this road as far as Demko was concerned.
Well, I mean, we don't have the context of the injury and knowing when he was playing through it. So we didn't have the information that they did at the time, and we didn't call them out on it, really. I mean, we express concern about Demko's workload, I think it's fair to say, as a general point of view.
Yep.
You know, should Demko's minutes have been managed differently, considering that he was ailing and the team never peaked above 30% playoff odds? Yeah. Yeah, I'd say they probably I mean, I think that's fair, but, you know, I'm not going to second guess when I didn't have the intel at the time and wasn't arguing for it at the time. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't see it coming, I can't expect them to have seen it coming. So that's going to be my, that's going to stay my hand in this instance. But I do think you do have to set it up. Like, Demko has to be the backup 25 times, 25 ball cap nights for Demko next year. Non-negotiable. I think this season we've seen so many goalies injured. We've also seen so many goalies miss games because of COVID protocol or whatever. But, you know, the fact that the top three goalies in starts this year to get injured late, and one, you know, severely underperforms his true talent. It's like, that's what more do we need? We don't need more evidence here. Well, it's over.
And when Demko missed time because of COVID, like when he came back, they rolled him right out. Right. And it just felt like they were trying to balance the workload early. Demko or Halak began to struggle, and they were never going to get off the idea that we're out of it. Like, they did just, no. Whether it was Boudreau or whoever, they just refused to think that. So they were going to do everything they can every night to maximize their chances to win, and that meant rolling out Demko. And, you know, was there a moment there where they could have turned to Martin and done more earlier? Like, I don't know, but I guess we'll never know. But it just felt like Halak's performance led them to overplay Demko. And remember, there were games where Halak also had to get hooked, so on scheduled nights off, they still had to roll Demko back out there, so he never truly got the rest that he needed, right? Starts versus appearances. But let's also talk a little bit about how this team sees itself. So the common theme from player after player was, you know, we know what we can do. We've now set a standard. We're really excited about next year and what this team can do, what this team can do. How nervous does that make you?
Not at all. Good. Good. The players should feel that way. I mean, they accomplished a lot. Credit to them. They believe to the end, they work to the end. They can feel like they, you know, held their heads up high and gave an honest effort and played to the best of their abilities. And I would say exceeded their true talent this season. So no one should be hanging their head. They should feel like there's good things ahead. The players saying that isn't what makes me nervous. Bruce Boudreau saying it isn't what makes me nervous. Bruce Boudreau made the case on Saturday after the last game. I mean, he had some numbers that were a little bit off, right? He was like, we were 23 games over 500. It's like, oh my goodness. And someone's going to make my head explode here. But, you know, he made the case that, look, you look at how we played. There were a couple games we started slow, but for the most part, we were really good. Fair enough. You know, he should be advocating to keep as good a roster together as he can. What's going to tell me a lot is what we hear from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin. And I don't think they're as high on this group as the coaches. And I'm sure they're not as high on this group as the players are. So let's see. I think we're going to learn a lot. I mean, one thing about Rutherford and Alvin is they've kept their options open, right? What have we seen from them so far? We've really seen four moves. One CHL overage signing in Archdeep Baines. We'll file that away for later. I think they would have liked to be more aggressive. They ended up sort of being bridesmaids in a couple of instances. They didn't get Aiden McDonough done. You know, perhaps they'll learn pretty quick that, in fact, getting NCAA free agents to Vancouver may be a little harder than it is to get them to Pittsburgh. But, you know, I'm not going to sort of assign them a failing grade. I'm just sort of listing it as a data point. Then we saw them make the Hamonic-Dermott deal. And obviously those are two separate deals, but we'll bunch them into one because they happened on the same day. But basically they shed salary off of a older, slower guy who may not have been a cultural fit in Vancouver and instead gambled on a 25-year-old high pedigree guy who had plateaued on a really good team and was falling down the depth chart. And Dermott was really good over the second half. Plus they opened $1.5 million in cap space. And then the last thing is they made the seller's deal. They made the seller's deal that they had to make, the Tyler Mott trade, and replaced Mott on the waiver wire with Brad Richardson, who came in and played really well, right? Like if the goal was to find a guy to replace their best penalty killer's minutes, Brad Richardson, A plus for the assignment he was given, right? I mean, no one can quibble with what Brad Richardson accomplished in sort of a fill-in role after the deadline. So, you know, put that together and what do you see? Well, you see a team that knows their defense needs to be faster. You see a team that when they reach a pressure point knows that they can't look narrowly at the immediate future or the team's, you know, I think it was still 15% playoff odds at the time they made the Mott deal, but in fact need to be confident about replacing the players they feel like they can replace and need to be sharp about it, and they nailed that. And so we're going to encounter some pressure points here, right? Because they were clearly responsive to the Mott pressure point. This was our last time to sell him, and they did. And they held pretty firm in those negotiations to a figure that they had in mind. Well, now you've got a pressure point with Brock Besser over the next 2 months. And you've got a pressure point of sorts with JT Miller and Bo Horvat, although that one's far less urgent considering that they're under contract for next year. But nonetheless, right? If the Mott example is indicative in any way, they're going to hold firm to a number. And if they don't get it, they're not going to be afraid to move and replace. And all of that said, I think quite rightly, there's going to be a sense that replacing a player like Horvat and a player like Miller is an awful lot more difficult to do than it is to replace a Tyler Mott. And that might factor into their thinking rather significantly as well. So we'll hear a little bit more about the club's direction and what to expect this offseason on Tuesday. I suspect that Rutherford and Alvin are going to continue to play it close to the vest, but what I think we're looking at is a hybrid approach. I think we're going to see them make moves with the future in mind, but I don't think we're going to see like a massive reorientation of this club's priorities, which result in them taking a more material step back next season. And, you know, that's not what I'd do. That's not what I'd recommend. But I think it's, you know, an improvement over rushing to take every possible shortcut imaginable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, we've got some key names that are going to be talked about. We talked about Brock Besser earlier. You've mentioned the guys whose contracts are due. JT Miller will be a big talking point this offseason. You could let that ride into next year, but he's going to want to negotiate off a 99-point season as opposed to what could come next year. Tyler Myers was asked about his future as well. And, you know things changed this summer because his no-trade clause turns into a 10-team list. And certainly if they wait one more year, then the cap hit is even that much lower and it becomes a buyout manageable deal. Like, so there's a number of different ways they can play it. But, you know, they've got to make some of those decisions, right? Like, you're right, their hybrid approach will prevent them from making all of those decisions, but they must make some of them, like some of the hard ones we're talking about.
Oh, 100%. I mean, right off the bat, you've got three, I think. You've got Horvat, Besser, Miller, all coming to a head pretty quick. And yes, Horvat and Miller are slightly different because you're just talking about extensions as opposed to, you know, a
qualifying offer.
Yeah, or more formidable sort of pressure point. But nonetheless, you know, I think you need to have those conversations and decide relatively quickly whether or not those numbers are going to make sense, whether or not you can build a Stanley Cup winning team around those numbers or not. I think you have to make that decision this offseason, especially because the moment you get in season and teams can't exceed the cap and their cap space is all spoken for, things get trickier. Your market immediately diminishes. Now, obviously, a bidding war at the trade deadline can result in some silly prices. So I'm not, you know, there's no urgency necessarily to make those decisions and be super proactive in making deals before you even enter next year. But I do think you have to have a very good sense of which way you're going, and ideally before the market opens.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the most obvious decision that should be made quite quickly.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So Drancer, Bruce There It Is going to be speaking on Monday, and we certainly have been led to believe that they're getting closer. What do you see as the timeline for this, as far as an extension goes, with the head coach, who is wildly popular? Everybody gave Boudreau a ringing endorsement today.
Yeah, I'm curious why he'd go before management, though, if they're going to have the deal announced before he speaks.
You're assuming that'll happen tomorrow?
I'm not. I would have been assuming that. If they announced that all three were going on Monday, I'd say, well, the extension's done. The fact that Boudreau goes first and then management leaves some wiggle room for me to be less than certain, but I still think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen this week. At this point, I think it's less a matter of when or if than when. But, you know, I don't know that they announce it before he speaks, just because, you know, why would you do that? You need management to talk to an extension, right? Like, you if you were going to have it done before anyone faces the media, why wouldn't you just put all three up together?
Yeah, and we've seen that before. And like, I think obviously if it's not done, you don't want to put the three of them up together, because correct, then they've got to look at each other when the other person's answering the question. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've seen it before where coaching staff has spoken on a different day than management here. So, yeah, like, you know, you wonder what the holdup is at this point, because there's no reason to look in another direction, given the level of buy-in these players have expressed. But as you know, I mean, it always comes down to term and money, and maybe there's still a bit of a hang up there, you know, on the term end, because what we talked about on our show last week was that the money seems pretty self-evident.
Yeah, somewhere between 3 and 4 million, and number of years, who knows? So look, we'll see how this plays out. I think Boudreau will be back. I think it's a no-brainer. I think the organization couldn't handle it any other way, and I don't think they will, and that's good.
So, knowing that, but we put the stamp on it, it's done. It's just a case of when. I want to ask you.
Well,
you know,
I mean, it's not done until it's done. I want to give us a little bit of wiggle. But yeah,
I know it's not. You're right, because like I said, I mean, they've scheduled these for a reason. Because if it was done, they would schedule it differently.
I would think so. Yeah.
Let's talk about what we should take away from the run of games this team has put together, and they're not in the playoffs, but I saw a Thomas Drance column, which basically said they should feel really good about this. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. This is the same Thomas Durant who said to me earlier, no, there's nothing to be gained here. These players have felt like they've gained something in terms of playing these types of games. I know you've hated the term meaningful games in April or what have you, but these players feel like they've gained a level of confidence, gained a level of culture, gained a standard of play, and are better for having gone through what they believe to be serious games, even if the rest of us, from a mathematical standpoint, know they weren't. Based on roster deployment and the pure effort of the players, these players played like they had nothing else left in the tank. They were giving it all. And you wrote a column, which was a little bit of a turn.
I was talking about one night.
You were just talking about one night?
Yeah, I was just talking about game 81. I was just talking about the last home date. And I was saying that it mattered that they put on a really good show in their last home date because the building wasn't full. Like, the building was really not full the last five home dates.
But, man, they were engaged.
The players?
No, the fans in that last home game.
The hardcores who were there were super into it. And in that last home game, fans were super engaged when they won in overtime. And good. Like, a comeback win and an overtime winner, that's exciting. That's a good product. And this team was, more often than not, a pretty good product in the second half. And yet, you know, there was a lot of debate about, like, the Larscheiders in the bottom, in the lower bowl, that one game against Ottawa. And I loved it. I thought the atmosphere was awesome with them there. But is that a business decision that this club would have made 10 years ago when there was a, you know, waiting list years long for season tickets? No chance, right? Would this club have rushed to throw everybody in the black skate jersey if they were really confident in, you know, the tickets out for the last two home dates? No chance. Like, you could see the seams in some ways of apathy impacting business decisions the club made down the stretch. And I think that's super notable, right? I mean, this was a team that played to 106 point pace in the last, you know, 50 plus games of the year. There's, you know, this sense among the hardcores that, like, this is what the market was waiting for. And it's like, you know, the market was sort of tuned out earlier, you know, like, by the time this team didn't make a positive first impression, they never really got close enough into the race for, you know, your casual fan to change their mind. You know, times are tough right now, right? There's gas prices are through the roof. People's disposable income is, you know, less than it was. There's still people who aren't comfortable going and watching a game with tens of thousands of strangers. And so the business realities impacting live sports and entertainment right now are extremely cumbersome. And I thought putting on a show in that last home game mattered in terms of, you know, making anyone who was there more likely to come back on day one next year, right? Putting on the type of show that will engage fans. That certainly mattered, no question. But I don't know that if the run on the back end didn't even move people enough to come show their support and fill the building in the last week of the season, considering what this team had accomplished. I mean, I don't think that rebuts my original point, Farhan.
If this team got brought back the way it is, because the truth is that, like, the building was relatively full for much of that run. Like, when I go back to that last homestand, and, you know, and for me, I wasn't at the last home game, but when I go back to that last homestand, the building was relatively full throughout that stretch. So certainly at the end, when they were out, you know, you view it as, hey, they didn't come to you know, in large numbers to recognize what they had done. Whereas to me, there was nothing to play for in those last couple of games.
But relatively full in Vancouver, man. Like, that's not full.
Well, okay, there's certainly not a season ticket waiting list, but you don't look and see swaths of empty seats.
No, but it was the Senators game where they had the Larscheiders in the lower bowl. The Dallas game, you know, my understanding is that crowd was relatively papered. You know, I'm just saying, it's not.
So what happens next year when we're 4 or 5 more months removed from COVID, and, you know, there still was a 650 winning percentage late? How do the fans react to an offseason with minimal movement? And I'm not suggesting that's how it's going to play out. Let me rephrase the question. What needs to happen for the fans to be really excited going into next year and for there to be a full building in Vancouver?
I mean, I think it would help if people bought into a plan. I think that's ultimately what people want. They don't need you to win the Stanley Cup. They need to know that they're going to get to see a hardworking team, right? And I think they want to buy in on the ground floor, right? They want to be part of like a journey, you know? And they and that's how you get people in early. It's like, oh, I was part of the journey of this team that did something special over 10 years. You need to sell that story to them. And at some point, I think that's a crucial, like that's what has to happen this offseason. That's what I'm so curious about on Tuesday. Like, what's the story? What in the big picture is this, you know, management, this new look management group going to say they're going to do that people can grab onto and believe in? I think that's what this team is lacking. I just think there's a lot of people who are like, okay, you know, there's some good pieces on this team, but they always screw it up. You know, like convince them that there's something to buy into. Convince them that there's something to believe in. And not the people who, like, you know, are still bought into Jim Benning's vision, right? Because it's like those people, you don't even need to worry about what those people think, because so long as it's a Canucks move, they'll find a way to say they like it. You know, like, you don't even have to worry about those people. Those are the dead enders who will support the organization no matter what they do. It's the rest of us. Like, you got to give people a narrative. You got to give people a storyline, something to grab onto firmly and be like, I believe in the Canucks. I believe that they can do this. And this is why. And I think that's what Rutherford and Alvin need to give people. I do think they need to give them, and it doesn't have to be the whole carrot, but it needs to be enough of it. It needs to be a little bit like a sliver of vision that people can say, okay, this is what they're doing. I'm into that. And this is why. And I think that's what we need to hear on Tuesday. That's my expectation for what we hear on Tuesday.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it because, I'm curious to see the level of specifics they lay out. Obviously, they're not going to tell you we're going to cut this guy and sign this guy. But I'm curious to see the level of just how much detail we get in terms of...
No, but is clearing cap space still a priority? If clearing cap space is still a priority, then you can expect changes, right?
I know, and that's the question. Like, people are going to ask them directly, are you going to engage in extension talks with Bo Horvat, with JT Miller, with Brock Besser? Like, you know, what's going to happen? What's your timeline? How much do you want all of them back? And if they tell you that they're going to have those discussions and they want to bring all of them back, like, if you get clarity on those three, that, yep, we'd love to have them all back if it makes sense, it probably tells you there's not going to be a lot of other things happening.
Well, but if it makes sense, leaves you a lot of wiggle. There's a lot of space to color between the lines in if it makes sense.
You're right. But, if you get some sort of strong notion that they'd like to bring all three back, I mean, they know what those numbers are going to take. Like, they know what the ballpark is. At this point, when you're negotiating, you're talking about 10%. Everybody knows where it's going to end in terms of a number.
Right.
Right? I mean, you with some guys, you've got a bit of wiggle room. Then, hey, if we go 6 years, it's this amount. If it's 8 years, it's this amount. But generally, you know the range. And so if they come in and say, we want to bring all three of them back, you know, when they get asked about each of them individually, I'm curious to see how committed they are, how strong their statements are around that, because that's a difficult
one. Be a big tell, no question.
Before we go, changing gears real quick, tough weekend for Abbotsford. You know, they were on a roll.
Really,
they won
11
of their, I think 11 of 12 to start April. They were just killing it. And then two one-sided losses this past weekend means they are not hosting a playoff game. We were talking about going to Abbotsford, for dinner after, just like we did at training camp. No!
Unless they win two games. They have to win two games to play a home date.
Yeah, but they need help too, don't they?
No, sorry, because if they win the series...
Oh, sorry, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, then they'll host one in the second round. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough break, no question, especially considering the investment down in Abbotsford. So, you know, I'm sure it's a disappointing outcome for the organization, but hey, go win two games against Bakersfield. Go do it. Go get it done.
Yeah, They've done that. They've done that this month.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're the best team in the West if they're playing at the top of their game. Stockton's incredible, but like, they're the best team in the West. And especially with Vasily Podkolzin airdrop, like, no one else has a player like that. Come on.
No, I'm not arguing with you, but Spencer Martin also going down.
Yeah.
If he takes Canucks' version of Spencer Martin, and I mean, and the Abbey version was good as well.
Yeah.
But both goaltenders going back, Will Lockwood going down along with Pod Colson, and of course, Sheldon Dries, Nick Batan are also going to return. And those were important players for them earlier. This team is well stocked. They're well positioned, but they're going to have to pull off a couple of road wins out of the gate here in order for them to get on that run. But the roster will be there for them.
It's a big ask, but look, Vasily Podkolzin is going to be point per game plus. That's my prediction for this playoffs. Like, he's going to dominate.
You don't think there's any adjustment period required?
Nope. I think he's just so much better than everyone else who will be down there and bigger. And I think he's got the type of individual game that will help. Like, he'll be able to adjust more quickly than normal. Yeah, I think Vasily Podkolzin's about to dominate. I think he's going to put on a show.
Well, that'll be fun. And hopefully we get a chance to go watch some of it in Abbotsford. But, you know, how much does that matter, right? Like, how much does a playoff run in Abbotsford matter for this franchise at this stage?
I think it would help a lot because it's the first year for the Abbey Canucks. I think if you generate some real revenue from the investment that the club has put down on that team, I think that would help justify continuing to spend like that down in Abbey. And I think that matters a ton. Like, you know, you saw it with Sheldon Dries and Brad Hunt and Kyle Burrows and honestly, Nick Batan. I loved Nick Patan's game at the NHL level. Like, Nick Batan is a perfect 13th forward in the NHL. He's just like, you know, you'd like to see him score maybe a bit more, but it's like he doesn't look out of place on the power play. He kind of drives play in the bottom six at 5-on-5. Like, he's just so smart and reliable. He's an NHL level player. And, you know, he's an NHL level player that you'd probably prefer to not be an everyday guy. But that doesn't mean that the minutes he gives, there's a material difference between an NHL player and an AHL player that can give you games. And like, that line matters. That floor matters. The Canucks, for the first time in years, decades, had this sort of higher floor where when they had to bring in a Sheldon Rempall or a Sheldon Dries or, you know, Justin Dowling was getting games and Brad Hunt and Kyle Burrows were playing on the NHL roster. Like, they had this floor where their depth guys were really good and their depth guys were really good because they spent a lot on those guys. They went out and had a spending spree and it mattered a ton. So I think Abbotsford going on a run would help justify continuing to operate in that manner, and continuing to operate in that manner will, if you do it consistently for a decade, give you a competitive edge. Like, look at the Toronto Maple Leafs. I know people love when I bring them up, but the Toronto Maple Leafs have like 60 minor league players. 60. And it's like, yeah, of course that's a huge competitive advantage. Of course it is. Of course their player development's second to none. Like, what? Is this a surprise? Non-cap spending done intelligently at various levels. 60 bodies on minor league contracts. Yeah, you're going to hit a couple of, if you're disciplined about that approach over 10 years, you're going to get two or three breaks that matter, that change the trajectory of your team. And by the way, Rutherford and Alvin, they know this. This is what they did in Wilkes-Barre. This is how you get Mark Donk. You spend. And if an Abbey playoff run helps justify that for a team that, or an organization anyway, that typically has sort of lagged in off-cap spending, well, then yeah, then I think it matters a lot, potentially a ton.
Well, hopefully we get a chance to see the rewards, play some home games, as you said, because it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. I know that building's a lot of fun to be in. And
then we can hang out at Browns.
We can. In that market, you know, like out in the Valley, they're buying in, right? Like, there's a lot of buzz and there's a lot of talk about it. And I think they'll fill the building if they wind up winning a round and getting to host some games.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. Let's go.
I'm looking forward to it. Let's make it happen. We'll have to watch some of these games online and digest it. Hey, yeah. Next
post-game,
show for us.
Abbey Canucks post-game VanCast live.
Live
no.
Room.
No, we're probably not doing that.
We could talk about Pod Colson and we could talk about Martin. Hey, listen, if you want to talk hockey, Ian Mendez hosts a live Stanley Cup first round preview. The Athletic Hockey Show beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern on Monday. Andrew Ladd joins the roundtable with Pizzo, Sivian, and Granger on Wednesday on the Athletic Hockey Show. As for us, thanks for listening to the VanCast. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review. And right now, you can get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/Vancast. We're going to be back either Wednesday night or Thursday morning. We'll get our next one out, so we will have had a chance to digest everything Bruce Boudreaux and the management team has to say over the next couple of days. For Drancer, I'm Farhan. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for logging on. We'll be back.